This CKNW podcast for AIM Medical Imaging, home of AIM Medical Imaging full body MRI scanning. A family history of medical issues is nothing to ignore. Book a preventative screening at aimmedicalimaging.com.
I'm Bill Good, and welcome to those of you joining us this morning on the Chorus Radio Network. This morning we're going to talk about the young guns, Gen Y, and their role in the future of construction. In Canada, the trades are still perceived by many to be a second-class career, and it's affecting our job force. We keep hearing about a looming worker shortage in BC, so why aren't more high school students considering a career in the trades? Earlier this week, we heard from Manley McLaughlin, president of the BC Construction Association. He told us about the need for a cultural shift. Parents of high school kids need to think of a possible career in the trades as a positive thing. My next three guests will be participating in a panel at the BuildX conference next week that will look at solutions to the looming labor shortage and how to set up Gen Y for success in the industry. Fiona Famuluk is president of the Vancouver Regional Construction Association. Heather James is CEO of Active First Aid. She's worked as an employee as well as just recently an employer. She can speak to being a Gen Y-er in the construction industry and a woman in the construction industry. And Jason Glue is district manager for BC of Graham Construction and Engineering. I welcome all to the program. And Fiona, let me start with you as president of the Vancouver Regional Construction Association. Is that perception that I spoke of true? Are people, are parents particularly still encouraging their kids to think about a university education and not necessarily considering the trades?
Good morning, Bill, and thank you. Yes, I believe so. And I think building on Manley's comments of earlier this week, there is a perception out there, there's a myth that we need to bust, that the construction industry offers a really satisfying and lucrative career for our Gen Yers. We know that there's a career shortage in Canada and in BC. The solution to the problem has to be multifaceted, and it is multifaceted. So attracting Gen Y to the industry is one part of the solution.
Wait a minute. When you say Gen Y, who are we talking about?
We're talking about the individuals born between 1982 and 1995. So
people in their 30s?
Late 20s, early
30s. Late 20s, 30s?
Yeah. So they are part of the solution, as well as the high school students who are graduating from high school today. So part of the solution is to attract them to the industry, paint the picture really vividly of the opportunities for them in the industry, and set them up for success. Because too often we hear that Gen Y is entitled. It's supposedly the most parented generation that seeks immediate praise for simple accomplishments. And we want to change that dialogue. We want to move from asking why should we employ Gen Ys into how can we employ Gen Ys and set them up for success.
And wouldn't part of this, Heather, be having Gen Ys actively pursuing jobs in the trades, like thinking of this as a good thing to be looking to do?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I'm finding with a lot of my friends and the Gen Ys that I deal with on a daily basis, people are trying to do more than just work and go to a job that they get paid to do. They're looking to find something that they enjoy doing every day because they want the loyalty. They want the stability, and they're going to be there day in and day out. So more and more I'm finding people are looking for things that are satisfying to them.
So what attracted you?
Okay. Well, first aid has always been a passion of mine. And I did a lot of different first aid type jobs in the oil rigs, ski patrolling, and I stumbled upon doing first aid in construction. And I just really love the personalities that I get to deal with on a day-to-day basis, the guys and the gals on the job site, on the site level, and just being able to work a good day's work and, you know, be fit and active while on the job
site. What do you see among your peers who chose to go to university. And you did you go to university?
I did for a short, you know, I did about 3 years of a Kinesis degree.
So what do you say to your colleagues, the kids you went to school with who decided to pursue a university degree but haven't been able to get a job that's matched with their degree?
I feel like today we're pressured to do life script, you know, graduate from high school, go to college, get married, buy a house, have kids. And I don't necessarily recommend going to post-secondary school right away. I, you know, shoot me if I'm wrong, but I tend to err on the side of give yourself some time to find out what you love. Identify the things inside you that make you happy and follow that dream. I didn't figure out what I really wanted to do until I was 28.
Yeah, I speak to a lot of high school and journalism classes, and one of the things I always tell them is don't try to set a life path. Take the opportunities as they come, because if you decide you're going to go in a certain direction, you may deny yourself a really good opportunity that comes along and you go, well, that's not in the script. But it might be a great opportunity.
Exactly.
And I think that applies to almost any field. Jason Glue, your thoughts, and you've had experience in the UK. Is there a different attitude in the UK to what you experienced here?
Hi, Bill. I think generally the UK market is slightly further ahead than my experience here in Canada. I think in summary, we need all types of individual. We need people focused on construction being a positive career option. And I think what's clear with Gen Ys is we need Gen Ys both on the management side and on the trade side. A number of the management individuals now in this industry have come up through the trades, and I think it's a great option, and we need to replace those. I would say that there's a skills shortage generally in construction, in the trades, and in management. And I think encouragement of Gen Ys to see this industry as a real positive industry and a great career option with some real sense of achievement is where we should be going as an industry and as a country, really.
Fiona Famulak, I mentioned that there's a BuildX conference taking place February 19th and 20th at the Convention Center West. Who do you want to attract to that, and what are people going to experience?
We want to attract a variety of audience, employers, employees, parents, high school students. We want a broad range of audience members because we feel as a panel that's going to host a couple of employers, a couple of Gen Y employees, and also a benefit provider. We feel that we have a really strong story to tell, and we want our audience members to hear our story. And our goal is to paint the opportunity of the career that individuals could have in the construction industry, give some people nuggets of gold to take away and think about at home in their offices, and ask some provocative questions in order to change that dialogue.
Give me a nugget. If I have a 17-year-old son or daughter, and they're not terribly academically engaged, what kind of a future could they be looking at? What sort of jobs could they be looking toward?
Well, to build on Jason's point, we need employees in both the managerial stream and also the trade stream. Now, I'm not from a construction background myself, but from the outside looking in and from speaking with our members, I can tell that there's a variety of opportunities that I need to share with the audience next Wednesday. As Jason said, it's a clear career path. Construction provides a clear career path supported by training and mentorship, which is what our Gen Ys are looking for. They need that coaching. It's an industry that will allow them to leverage the expertise that they bring. They're particularly savvy with technology, and our employers have the opportunity to give the Gen Ys scope to leverage technology, improve productivity.
Are Gen Ys any different from the generations that came before? Heather?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, I've got kids who are Gen Ys.
Yeah, we're all after the same thing.
Yeah, their ambitions, their goals are no different to than mine were when I was 25, 30 years old.
Yeah,
absolutely. I agree. I think each generation that follows could be the entitled generation. We all bring different skills to the table. Our baby boomers and our Gen Xs work using a different philosophy to
but
the
But it was easier for us. I mean, it was easier for us to either come straight out of high school and get a good job in a mill or in a fish plant or wherever. And it was much easier for us to buy our first home. You didn't need $100,000. I mean, incomes weren't what they are today, but $5,000-$6,000 down, and you could buy your first house. Mm. It might not be in North Vancouver.
And to that, I would say, again, painting the opportunity for our Gen Ys, a career in construction can pay comparable and often more than a counterpart career in another industry. So there's an opportunity there.
Absolutely.
To buy your first home if you pursue a career in construction.
Back with your thoughts, perhaps your experience. Hawk on Twitter says, because the industry leaders need to promote the benefits of accreditation. Chefs, for example, with their red seal. Back with your calls, your comments, your experience, 604-280-9898. Talking about a BuildX conference that's taking place February 19th and 20th. That's next Wednesday and Thursday at the Vancouver Convention Center West. It will feature interior design, architecture, property and real estate management and construction and renovation industries. Talking with Jason Glue, District Manager for BC with Graham Construction and Engineering. Fiona Famuluk, President of the Vancouver Regional Construction Association, and Heather James, CEO with Active First Aid. And just before we get to your calls, I think, Jason Glue, something we should talk about is, I mean, construction is a very broad term. There are a lot of different kinds of jobs that fall under the umbrella of construction.
Yeah, I think it's an important point to say, moving back earlier, we talked about people not really knowing what they wanted to do for a career. And I think the good thing with construction is it's so varied and so wide. The industry is offers many, many opportunities, be it either on the trades, on the tools, on the management side, working for general contractors, working for subcontractors, running your own business. And there are various aspects to that, the various different markets, many, many different things people can do. And so you haven't got to choose what you do off the bat. You can move into it and then diversify as it fits every individual.
Let me get to some calls. Cody, good morning.
Morning. I just want to touch on a couple of things. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, still there. The couple of things your guest said was promotion was a big one. The only reason I'm in trades and I'm 29, I've been a journeyman for 5 years now. I started in high school.
Yep.
But as far as me getting the trade, it was totally happenstance. My dad gave me a choice, whether I go to post-secondary or get a trade. But other than that, no one else had ever talked about a trade for me. And now I own a house. My wife doesn't have to work. I have two kids. The trade is incredibly lucrative. And the other thing with Generation Y, the one your other guest said about trying to take a year off and trying to find what you love, I can't imagine myself doing what I love and getting paid for it. What I did was found a trade that fit my natural skills and ability and did what I like to do. If you do what you love to do, I can't imagine that many people can say they get paid a lot of money for it. Find out what you're good at. That's all. So many people, the other thing Generation Y focuses on is trying to make money at 40 hours a week. No one does that. You can't get ahead working 40 hours a week. You got to spend extra time learning, studying, taking seminars. You got to put easy in 50 hours a week to be good at anything.
Jason, you are going to do well.
It's a good news story.
Because you're spot on. And, and that hasn't changed over the years. I don't know anybody who's been really successful working 40 hours a week or 5 days a week. It just doesn't work. I mean, you may pay the rent, but you're not really going anywhere. And I'm looking at Heather and thinking she's nodding her head in agreement.
Yes. And I'm definitely agreeing with Jason. doing what you love and doing what you're good at is, he's totally right, two different things. And definitely if you get into doing things that you're good at and good with your hands, it becomes a thing that you love.
We talked a little bit in the last segment about people having to move out of their comfort zone too. Ingeborg on Twitter says, son 23, daughter 25, both had full-time jobs while at school. Both are moving for job opportunities. Both plan to live in Vancouver by 2020. You know, good for them, because I suspect it's going to work for them. They have a goal, but it's not short-term, and they're willing to sacrifice to some degree in order to get where they want to be. Nick, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Bill. As a childcare worker, a parent, and a foster parent, I can say a big part of the problem, and I've worked in the school system, is the school system doesn't really care about any kids that aren't going to university. Mm-hmm. And it just annoys the hell out of me, because only 20% of kids will go to university. The school system should be geared towards the 80% of the kids they look after that are never going to go to university.
Interesting perception.
I mean, it's all they care about. It's basically because teachers themselves, that's the only career path they've had. When I was a kid at school, my teachers had worked in the real world for 10, 15 years. I had chemistry teachers that had served in the Army during the Second World War. I had a geography teacher that was a miner before he went to university. And frankly, those teachers had a better sense of what the kids were going to do with it.
We talked about that earlier this week with people working in shop class. I mean, does a shop teacher really need to spend 4 or 5 years in education if they've had 4 or 5 years in construction?
Well, I mean, it's not even just the shop class, just teachers in general.
Yeah, no, I know, but I just use that as an example.
If you're standing in front of a group of kids, most of whom are not going to follow your career path, you should, if you're a teacher, have some sense of what the heck those kids are going to have to go through in terms of applying for jobs and what have you. And I worked with teachers who almost exclusively had gone straight from high school to university and then into teaching. Some of them were great, some of them weren't great, but the point is none of them had a clue as to what most of the kids were going to have to do in their lives.
Very interesting. Thank you, Nick. Just in the last half minute that we have, Fiona, your project, your BuildX conference on next Wednesday and Thursday, open to the public?
Absolutely. I believe we have 120 people registered for the panel discussion so far. And there's still room for sign up. So please, if this topic appeals to you, and we're getting a lot of good feedback from our members and non-members about it, please take the opportunity to come by, listen to what the panel has to say, ask us some questions, and get informed.
My thanks to Jason Glue, to Heather James and Fiona Famulak. We're going to break for the news headlines, and then I want your thoughts on crack pipes being available in vending machines in downtown Vancouver. A crack pipe vending machine for addicts sounds like the punchline of a bad joke. But are approaches that appear to enable users, in fact, effective in helping them to survive and maybe even recover? Portland Hotel Society's Drug Users Resource Center set up 2 vending machines in the downtown east side. Each vending machine holds about 200 pipes, which are restocked every few days. The vending machine has been the butt of jokes on the talk show circuit in the United States, and Fox News' Bill O'Reilly had this to say.
In Canada, the situation has reached a level of absurdity. In Vancouver, perhaps the most permissive drug city in North America, you can now get a crack pipe for 25 cents.
A not-for-profit organization has installed crack pipe vending machines in Vancouver's troubled downtown East Side neighborhood. The Portland Hotel Society is operating a pair of the machines, which dispense Pyrex glass pipes for 25 cents apiece. Many programs provide pipes for drug users, but generally on a one pipe per person per day basis. The group says allowing users to buy as many pipes as they want will curb the spread of disease, as fewer pipes will be reused.
With the legalization of marijuana in Washington State and Colorado, can crack pipe vending machines here be far behind? Joining us once again from Washington, Charles Krauthammer. So there's a lot of things in play here with this drug war deal. I mean, there's the criminality of it. There's the addiction quotient. We just saw Philip Seymour Hoffman kill himself with heroin. There's a permissive atmosphere in cities like Vancouver and Amsterdam, Holland, and Portugal. How do you see it?
You know, that's a hotel in Vancouver. You really want to check in with the family, isn't it?
No. I mean, and it's disgusting. If
but that's the point.
Vancouver's a beautiful town. Have you been?
No.
It's beautiful. And this drug culture there has ruined the downtown area, just as it did in Zurich, Switzerland.
Bill O'Reilly on Fox. I put the question to Dr. Perry Kendall, our provincial health officer, earlier this week.
I'm supportive of that action. I don't think the government's tough on drug stance has much chance of success. In fact, I think it runs counter to most of the evidence around how one deals with addiction drug use and tries to reduce the harms from it. There's really good evidence from North America and Europe that actually using things like crack pipes reduces the risk of HIV or hepatitis C or other diseases and is a way of getting a hard-to-reach group into some kind of treatment. I think the machines that the Portland Hotel has, there are two of them. One is in a resource center for people who use drugs and are continually in contact with social workers or healthcare workers. And the other one is in a housing situation, which is deliberately designed to house people who have not yet managed to get off crack or other drugs. And so it's a place that can keep them relatively safe and off the streets.
Mark Townsend is in studio with me this morning. He's executive director of the Portland Hotel Society, and I guess I'll just start by asking you, what was your reaction to Bill O'Reilly?
Well, I was kind of sad, but I mean, that's the kind of nature of those kind of shows, and obviously if we're involved with a crack pipe vending machine, we are going to be the bit of the butt of jokes. I've got a funny haircut, and I'm used to getting poked fun at it for it, but underneath it, it's a serious issue. It's really not a joke, and Vancouver has done better by embracing some of these things. I live in the downtown east side area, and you know, over the years, there are now no needles outside of my house, there are no condoms, there are no paraphernalia. Things have gotten better. Life expectancy in the downtown east side has gone up by a decade, so that's a good achievement. HIV has come down to historic low conditions, and we're getting people off the street. There's less active using on the street. So I'm not sure, you know, if anyone's been to America recently, but their drug situation seems disastrous. So I just think it's kind of, you know, that's the nature of those shows, and you have to expect it. But what I find is people are all for having a joke, but when they scratch the surface of these things, they're not quite as foolhardy as they might seem. We can just let people contract all kinds of diseases, and that might just be something we don't worry about, but that ultimately affects all of us, you and me. That diseases spread, whether it's SARS, whether it's AIDS, whether it's hepatitis C, they spread from one group to another.
So does having crack pipes available in vending machines, does that equate to the supervised injection site in that you're trying to keep people healthy or healthier at less risk of serious disease or overdose or death, while recognizing you're not going to be able to just stamp out the addiction?
Yeah, that's exactly right. We're also trying to protect the general public. It's the Center for Disease Control that recognizes a risk around crack pipe use and the spread of HIV/AIDS and hepatitis C. So those things seem like, well, why would we worry about them? But that's what keeps us safe, the wider population safe. We don't want things spreading. And also, an HIV case can cost anywhere between 200,000 and 1.4 million. So it's very expensive. And these crack pipes, there's no funding for them. They fund themselves. The other funny, kind of funny thing when you think of Bill O'Reilly's comics is, you know, I think you call them head shops. All over America, there are places you can buy crack pipes, and they're more expensive than 25 cents, but you can buy them in all kinds of shops. The little things that people put roses in, trust me, people across America are not the biggest buyers of these little glass rose stems. Those are crack pipes. So it's really like they've got kind of their blinders on when they don't see that. And you can buy them in stores in this city too.
Darlington on Twitter says, I completely support it. 25 cents per pipe or $1 million for a new HIV infection. Do the math. Crack pipes are worth it.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that concerns people, and rightly so, they don't want to think that we're encouraging drug use. And all I can tell you is we are not. The evidence on that is we're not. In the province newspaper today, we read that, you know, if we're in such a permissive city, it's great to hear that drug use amongst adolescents and binge drinking is down. People don't see these things as, you know, when they look at the residents in the downtown east side that are suffering the scourge of addiction, they don't see that and think, oh, whoopee-doo, I want to go and do that. It's sad. It's depressing. You don't want to do it. It doesn't glamorize it. But people are going to do these things. And all of us, I mean, I struggle with addictions not as serious as this. My partner suffers with the addiction of smoking and being unable to stop. And you want people to stop. You don't want them to. But it's complex. It's not simple. If it was simple, we wouldn't sit here and chat about this endlessly. Because really, this is the same kind of thing as needle exchange. So it is sad, though, when you hear our federal government saying they're against needle exchange. I mean, this is like being against condom distribution or thinking that these things don't help stop spread the diseases in our city. So that then starts to get a bit irresponsible. So I'm okay with joking about it, but once you scratch the surface, it is a serious issue. And then I think people in leadership, so it's good that people like Perry Kendall understand it and the health authority in this province, but it's sad when our federal government doesn't understand it and kind of joins in the kind of talk show joke about it when really they should take it seriously as a way of protecting the population and saving money.
Are you surprised that the federal government, that the Prime Minister, haven't been convinced by the evidence that has convinced people like Dr. Kendall, whose prime interest is in health and in health care and in disease prevention? He's not out to promote drug use.
Yeah. Well, it does make me very, very sad. And, we've kind of been, in quotes, picked on by the federal government. And again, on this crack pipe thing, they're saying in the House of Commons, this is, silly and they don't support needle exchange. I mean, this is foolishness. The few countries in the world that don't support needle exchange now are kind of like Iran, China, and Russia. And in the UN right now, the federal Canadian government is lining up with those kind of bedfellows on these issues. It's just kind of out to lunch. And it makes me sad because I don't think it's a party political thing. In this city, as you know, it was a conservative mayor that decided to take a more pragmatic,
Philip Horn.
Yeah, practical approach. And so I just think it's like they're so far away and they're so out of touch, with their chauffeur cars and their chefs and a different world that they just, if only you could have them for 5 minutes and get past the rhetoric and, the joke and take it seriously, I'm sure they would understand. But we don't get that opportunity, to do that, unfortunately.
Talking with Mark Townsend, Executive Director of the Portland Hotel Society, on the issue of crack pipes in vending machines on the downtown east side. 604-280-9898 is my number. Toll free 1-877-399-9898 if you'd like to join in the discussion. Also welcome your participation on Twitter, on Facebook, and email. Back right after this. Talking with Mark Townsend, Executive Director of the Portland Hotel Society, I don't think there was anybody who didn't think that vending machines dispensing crack pipes was not going to be controversial. Bill O'Reilly jumped all over it on his Fox television show as if they didn't have inner city problems in the United States, as if crack wasn't an issue in the United States. But the idea of dispensing crack pipes runs contrary to what most of us at first blush would think makes sense. But then so did the supervised injection site. And a lot of people have come around on that issue because it's been demonstrated that while it doesn't necessarily direct people off of drugs, it keeps them healthier and safer. And eventually, for some, it's a bridge to getting straight. I'm interested in your thoughts. Don, good morning, to you.
Morning. I'd like to first qualify my question is I would be in support of any program that that helps the people that need it and society overall. Going to the O'Reilly situation, would like to hear your guests' response to O'Reilly suggesting that progressive cities like Geneva, Amsterdam, Zurich are actually reversing their policies away from these type of programs. And then also, if given the opportunity, would you go on the O'Reilly Show to sort of get the information out that you're conveying now?
Well, we're always happy to get the information out. In terms of other cities rolling stuff back, it's not really true. I mean, Switzerland has gone through a massive process of embracing these kind of things, including to do these kind of policies, they even had to have a federal referendum, and that's what their population has chosen. And if anyone's been to Zurich, and I have, it's a beautiful city. And if anyone's been to some of the cities in America, they really are pretty bad. We have had American needle exchange folk in Vancouver, and we took them to what we would see as the most violent corner of our city, and they were laughing, kind of saying, well, we were actually giving someone there in some sandwiches. And it's like they were saying, well, in our city, we couldn't even, you know, if we did that, it would be a disaster. So, you know, there isn't a level of violence, and this is a beautiful city. And the initiatives that we've all collectively worked on have helped us all. It's protected addicts, and it's protected the wider community from disease, from kind of the rampant kind of public disorder you see in the inner cities of the United States.
My gut reaction to Bill O'Reilly was the downtown east side gets a probably disproportionate amount of media coverage. But if you live in other parts of even downtown Vancouver, if you live in the West End, if you live in False Creek, if you live in Coal Harbor, you don't think that you're living in the middle of a drug-infested city. The image that O'Reilly portrays is, in my view, a false one if you're looking at the city overall.
Yeah, it's a beautiful city. Well, I'm sitting in your studio, and it is beautiful, and it is not. You know, I've been to many American cities, and, you know, they're a mess. You know, even a beautiful city like San Francisco, I had never been there. When I went there, I was shocked by, you know, the state of their drug use, and it just seemed like, you know, a mess. I couldn't believe it. So, I mean, I think you have to expect, you know, it's like my hair. I get poked fun at for my hair or lack of hair. And, you know, obviously Bill O'Reilly's in the business of poking fun at these things. But underneath that, these are serious issues. And I think most people, when they scratch the surface and look at the issues properly, understand, you know, it makes sense to take pragmatic, cost-effective, practical steps to make your city better, to protect people, to save money.
Barry, good morning.
Yes, good morning, Bill, and your guest. Just a couple quick points. My brother and his wife were out from Saskatchewan early January, went downtown east side. They'd heard about the Pigeon Restaurant, lovely food, but, you know, they were appalled by, you know, there is open drug use. I believe it's been 10 years now since the supervised injection site has got up and running. I have never yet heard any stats from them as to, quote, how many people they have weaned off drugs. And here we are, crack pipes. You know, what's next? Are we going to be handing out free crack cocaine on the corners? It's just gone so far.
The stat you might look up, and I don't have it in front of me, is the number of overdose deaths on the downtown east side prior to the supervised injection site, and I don't think there has been a single overdose death at the supervised injection site, and there have been a lot of lives saved there. That's a significant factor.
Yes, it is. There's been over a million injections and no one's died. But, I mean, obviously we want to do better. We don't want the kind of open drug scene that we still do have, but that isn't that other cities don't have that. There's been a massive improvement. As I said earlier, there's been a 10-year life expectancy increase in the downtown east side. There is, I live in that neighborhood, and there is a massive reduction in open drug use. There's a massive reduction in discarded needles and condoms. So things are getting better. It doesn't mean that we're living in heaven. We are a big city, and like all big cities across Canada and across North America, they face challenges. And Vancouver is also kind of a young city in taking on its kind of, you know, its metropolitan kind of nature. So,
more after this. Talking with Mark Townsend, Executive Director of the Portland Hotel Society, and we're talking about the controversy around crack pipes being made available in vending machines in two downtown East Side locations for 25 cents. Corey, your thoughts. Good morning.
Hi, Bill. I'm a drug and alcohol counselor. I was actually on your show kind of facing off against Mark a couple of years ago. But I got a couple of things. First of all, the state commenting on our drug issues is a bit like the pot calling the kettle black. A lot of, they got the same problems we do, and they've got a lot of people that are drug addicted sitting in jail as their way of dealing with it. But my question to Mark is, why put them in a vending machine? Because that sort of lends itself to people making jokes about it, like your chips or your pop coming out of a vending machine. Why didn't you just give them away like you do with the needle exchange? Wouldn't that have been a better idea?
Fair question.
Yeah, it is a good question. The issue we had is we had to do it in a way that didn't cost anything, so we had no money to do this. We were really responding to a lack of pipes in the community that we're meant to serve, but there was no money for any pipes, so we needed a way that was not labor-intensive and that could manage, you know, make sure there was no squabbling over the 25 cents or keeping track of the 25 cents or the pipes, so that was the mechanism we chose. And they're placed in places where drug users go, and they're just convenient in terms of making it cheap for us to operate them.
My thanks to Mark Townsend and to you.
Thanks.
We're going to break for the news to the top of the hour, and then we are going to talk about the openly gay controversy in the NFL.